From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, and we're pleased to welcome in Father Michael Kiernan. Father, good day to you.
Good day to you, Bob, and all our listeners today, and a blessed and beautiful day it is indeed in the Lord, yeah.
Yeah, let us rejoice and be glad in it, I like to say, because I didn't make that up, but I read it somewhere.
Yeah, I think I saw that too. That's been said before. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I tell kids, my kids, look in the mirror. If I'm still here, there must be a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are.
A good reason, yeah.
A good reason. Yeah. And that holds for every person on the face of the earth. If you're here today, there's a good reason you're here. And
yeah, God made you and has a purpose, yeah.
Yeah, and you might think, oh, well, my purpose isn't very important. No, it's just as important as everybody else's purpose. Yep.
Indeed.
So a lot happening here in our diocese. Do you want to break the news? Or you want me to break the news?
Well, you go ahead and I'll deal with it from there, yeah.
We have a new auxiliary bishop here, or I don't even know want to say new because it's definitely new, but we have not had an auxiliary bishop for some time now, and he was just introduced to the staff here at the Pastoral Center this morning, but I think the press release came out over the weekend. Father Ray Bercible, who is currently the pastor at St. Francis in downtown Sacramento, and prior to that was at St. James in Davis as my pastor and has been at a number of parishes as well. He is now the auxiliary bishop elect in the Diocese of Sacramento and will be ordained at the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament on May the 31st. And then we'll take away the elect part and he will be auxiliary bishop Ray Bercible. And, of course, in Davis, we called him Father Ray, and that seemed to fit him very well. And he was beloved.
He'll probably be Bishop Ray to most people, I'm sure. He's, this is great news and exciting news. We've never had an auxiliary bishop from our own ranks.
From our own ranks, in
the diocese. So this is, and indeed, we haven't had a bishop in general for a long time. We did have the first couple of bishops after Bishop Minogue were local priests, but after that it was all people coming in from various places. And then, of course, many different auxiliaries came in, including the last one, Bishop Myron Cotner, and then before that the beloved Bishop Garcia, now deceased, of course, and so on. So this is a red-letter day for the Diocese of Sacramento, yeah.
And we have not had an auxiliary since Bishop Cotta became the Bishop of Stockton.
Yeah, and that's, what, maybe 3 years or more?
Oh, I think it might even be more than that.
It's
funny how time flies. You know, I think something was 6 months ago, and my wife says, no, that was actually 6 years ago. It definitely has been a long time,
and people were wondering what was happening, and Bishop would be asked once in a while about it at priest meetings and so on, and he would just give some sort of answer that, well, we'll see, you know, it takes, these things take time, and we'll see, but he was never too committal, and certainly would never say, well, I think 3 months from now or 6 months from now we'll have one, but anyway, and in a way it's sort of caught a lot of people by surprise now, because you know, when you time has gone by, and he's been asked several times. It was interesting. We had what we call a conversation with the bishop the other day, a week ago today, for a couple of hours on any topic under the sun. That was prime time for that before the retreat for priests began all last week. But funnily enough, nobody asked him about any word on auxiliary. And I thought what he would have said if we'd ask, because of course he knew then. He probably knew the week or two or more ago, and the soon-to-be Bishop Ray probably knew a week ago or several days ago. Anyway,
I think Bishop said this morning at the get together at the Pastoral Center. I think he said last week, like a week, it had been a week. And everybody had to be keep it quiet. Not everybody. There were only a couple of people.
Very. Yeah. Yeah, it's extremely important to keep it quiet because I don't know whether it was true or not, but I heard many years ago, not here, but in another place, that some priest was asked to be a bishop, and he told his mother, and unfortunately told some people, and the word got out, and I think Rome pulled the nomination.
Oh, my goodness.
Because obviously there's a lot to be said for, you know, you have to be a person who can keep things to yourself by the nature of being a priest sometimes even, and certainly being a bishop and so on. So if you were asked not to say something and then you said it, well, you sort of loose-lipped. So anyway, he would not have been able to say anything about it. But it was a nice thing to have the retreat and to have him be able to be there like a regular guy, as priests, you know, brother and so on, and just talking to priests and whatever else people do on retreat. And just even though, you know, bishops try to be very brotherly and friendly and comfortable and at home with their priests, by the nature of things, there is a little wall there that inevitably is set up because the bishop has either, of course, especially Bishop Soto, the head bishop, but even the auxiliary bishop, you know, there will be certain situations that certainly, you know, he might be friends with Father A or Father B or someone, but now he probably has to, I mean, he could find himself in some disagreement over something that's happening, and, you know, he can't be able to be just a friend like he was before, you know. So that's a challenge for anybody who becomes a bishop to be close to the priest, but also to have a certain amount of distance.
Is that perhaps one of the reasons that you don't always see, whether it's a bishop or an auxiliary bishop, come from the diocese that he's been serving as a priest?
Well, there would be some of that, I think, because, again, if you've been around for a long time with people, you know, they have perceptions of you and you maybe have perceptions of them and all of that. And sometimes, you know, it can be that a new broom sweeps clean, as they say. And, that would be more, I think, for the ordinaries, we call them, the head bishop, the real bishop of the diocese, mm-hmm. because he's the one who, I mean, even going forward, Bishop Ray will have very few decisions to make in a sense. He'll have to talk to priests and others, but the final analysis, every major decision has to be made by Bishop Soto,
right.
or the bishop of the day. Right. And so in that sense, it's not that important. He won't have to be, as it were, lay down the law or
right.
the heavy hand or whatever you want right. to call it. I think, and he will just have such a fine reputation with priests, and he's been a priest man all his life, and
right.
he's been on every board that I can think of, priest council, personnel board. I think he still is, though he'd probably have to go off that now, but I think he's a member of the review board. So he has... He's been a dean, I'm sure, and, you know, been a pastor of many parishes. So he's very personable and well-loved by priests, you know, independent of this. But I would say this is a very popular choice to make him auxiliary bishop.
Well, I think so. I called my wife, Shelley, and we both cried on the phone, you know. It's like mm-hmm. when I got the news, it was just like we're overjoyed that our church is going to be blessed with Father Ray in a new role. And we just think it's a we think it's a bright, shiny day, you know, and we obviously we love Bishop Soto, and to see him now have help from Bishop-elect Bercible is just wonderful.
Yeah, and I was talking to somebody who was at his Mass Saturday evening, and of course now he's even now he can wear his skull cap and his cross, and so they were just saying that, you know, it looked like he'd been wearing that all his life. it seemed very natural and very. Some person, a lady there, told me that she said, "Is it okay to hug a bishop?" because they've been friends for a long time, and so he laughed at that. But I mean, I've been privileged to know Bishop Ray now for years and years, and see him in different things. And I was just thinking the other day that somebody that must be really satisfied with all this in heaven is Monsignor T. Brandon O'Sullivan.
Yes.
Who was his mentor, because he served in St. Anthony's for a number of years with Brandon, and they were great friends. And I mean, Brandon would always, then he went over to St. Paul, which of course was down the street on Florin Road. And so that was stone's throw away for Brandon, and they had meals and all of that. And so he was just enormously appreciative of young Ray as he was then.
He still presents very young. He just does.
Well, that's the way Filipinos do, and a lot of Asians actually are like that. But he is 61, so that's a good age, and it's a nice age too. You know, he'll have 14 years to be a bishop now, and he looks like he's in great health. I know he's a big walker and keeps himself fit and doesn't, you know, he's not overweight or anything. So, because that's one of the things I think they look into, among many other things, in the choosing of bishops, which is a very elaborate process. They look into health and well-being and stuff like that, because you don't want to pick somebody who is not in good health and somebody who hasn't a reasonable chance of having a good number of years, because it's a very big undertaking to choose a bishop and to install a bishop. I mean, all that goes into that. And then if he were to be only around for a while, well, who knows what God has in mind for anybody. But as of now, one would say that if a person is of good health and looks fit and all that, but then that's a good thing to go with. And one of the things that's amazing, actually, my experience, I've had a lot of experience of bishops across the country, actually, over the years. And I'm just amazed at how strong they are and how hardworking they are and how dedicated they are, and how all of them, you know, live. Well, look at the Holy Father, you know, 87. And then I know cardinals. I think Cardinal Maida is alive still, and he's like 98. And there's many cardinals. Cardinal Mahoney must be now at least 85 or so. And of course, Bishop Wiegand and Bishop John Cummins, who was an auxiliary bishop here, is a great age, but he's still alive down in Oakland, long retired. So they have a great capacity for a long life and health. And also one of the things that always impressed me about bishops is that, you know, they keep going. They never seem to get tired or never seem to get frustrated or drop their hands, you know, but they keep on fighting the good fight. And mustn't be easy, because not just now because of all that's going on with the bankruptcy and stuff like that, but any bishop in any age has tough decisions to make and problems with this, that, and the other. And so it takes a lot of faith and dedication and commitment to keep on going.
Yeah. Father Ray at the little gathering this morning said that when he was wearing the skull cap, the first thing he said to the parishioners at St. Francis was, "There's nothing wrong with my head." Then he described it when the papal nuncio had called him, you know, and he thought at first that it was curtains, that this was it, you know, like,
yes,
like, you know, that you're I think he said that he was turning 60 in October. But whatever, 60, 60, what? But they asked him his age and then said, are you in good health? And he said, yeah, I walk about 4 miles a day around downtown. And, you know, like, yeah, I think I am. But like you say, who knows? He said, Lord, if this is the end, I've really enjoyed my ministry, you know, but and then he finds out the news. It was quite humorous. It was a great story.
Yeah. Oh yeah, well that's a fascinating story indeed. And I've heard from a few bishops who found out how they, you know, the announcement, and some of them I know, the present Archbishop up in Seattle. He was living in Wyoming at the time and mm-hmm. was a priest. He was out chopping wood and the phone rang and he picked it up like, you know, like normal. And hi, how are you? Who's this? And it was the apostolic delegate who told him and so on. So different remembrances. I'm sure each bishop gets that call in a you know, have a different experience with it, yeah.
Yeah,
and of course, by the nature of things, they don't know, because all the choosing of a bishop is done with enormous secrecy and very, very in-depth, you know, checkout. I mean, I believe there's like 100, could be up to 100 questionnaires.
Mm-hmm.
Send out. So if Father A was going to be, you know, considered for bishop, then there's all sorts of ways that his life is checked out. And, you know, if you knew him well, they'd probably send you a questionnaire. And mm-hmm. if I knew him well, they'd send mm-hmm. me a questionnaire. And they'll cross it with lay people, they'll cross it with sisters, probably with deacons, probably with priests. You know, maybe if there's a bishop who would know him someplace in God knows where, whatever. And so the whole goal is to really delve totally in depth to this person. And it's really confidential. I mean, if you got that survey, there are strict guidelines given to you mm-hmm. how to handle it. And you probably can't tell your wife about it.
Right.
I don't know about that, but certainly you. I know a priest, for instance, wouldn't be allowed to tell his secretaries or right. have them mail it back or any of that, because they could might put two and two together, you know, and so on. So, and the priest who is, and every effort is made to never let the priest who is being considered know anything is afoot, because then what happens if you think that you're being considered and then later on you're not? Well, you say, well, gee, they must. Found out that I must think that I'm a bad person.
Exactly.
Well, I heard they were thinking of me, and now I didn't get it. And so, what have I been doing wrong? And you carry that with you maybe for the rest of your life that you you were judged. So he would have not known a thing about that, no more than the man in the moon.
Very interesting. So, truly a complete shock.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It'd be, you know, like if you got a call today, you know, from the President of the United States saying that he wanted you to serve on communications at the White House.
Yeah.
Well, just, you know, out of the blue, totally last thing you were thinking of, you know. Yeah. And I don't think Bishop Ray now would be thinking of that. He might be a little bit towards the end of the spectrum of age. They seem to want to go between 40, 43, up to 55, 56, 57.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they want to get value for their money, as it were, in picking a man who will be there for quite a long time. But still, 14, 15 years now is lots of time and so on. And but generally speaking, they don't go much beyond 60.
Yeah, and you, I guess there is about a 10-second hesitation. Can I think about it for a minute? Oh, I think we may have lost Father Kieran there for a minute, but we will get him back on the air as soon as possible. Modern technology should tell you about the Northern California chapter of the Knights of Columbus is hosting the 11th annual Vocations Benefit Dinner Saturday, June the 15th, 4 p.m. It will be at St. Teresa of Avila Catholic Church, 11600 Atwood Road in Auburn. The theme, 2024 theme, You Are the Body of Christ. And there will be a guest speakers, seminarian guest speakers. There will be a special guest, of course, is Bishop Soto. And you get to meet all of our wonderful seminarians, Victor Amador and Ben Condon and a whole bunch of others, Alejandro de Leona. Father, do we have you back?
Yes.
Oh, there you are. There you are.
Yes, back again. We got cut off for some reason.
We were doing top secret talk probably and got cut off. I forget whose vocation story I was hearing at the time, but it was a bishop. I think it was Bishop Wiegand, and he said, I asked if I could think about it, or, you know, like, can I have overnight to think about it? When he was, I think it was prior to even becoming the Bishop of Salt Lake, he was like, what? Who is this calling, really? You know?
Yes.
And
I think they are given some time to think about it, and I think you have to, you know, you do have the right to say no.
Sure.
Like, obviously, you know, again, if like most, well, all priests, I'm sure, you know, if they're asked to do something by either the bishop, you know, to move from one parish to another or take some ministry or do this, that, or the other, a responsibility, then you take it as the voice of God and call of God. And so if the apostolic delegate is calling, then, I mean, the answer can only be yes, I will.
Yep. I remember talking to, is it Archbishop Wester or just Bishop Wester? I think it's Archbishop, isn't it?
Archbishop, yeah.
Yeah, in Santa Fe, really more headquartered in Albuquerque, really, but it is the Archdiocese of Santa Fe. And asking him that a number of years ago, and he said when he got the call, he was in Salt Lake and was just so happy there, I guess, want a better word, and thought they were making great progress there. And he was like, how am I going to say goodbye to all these people? You know, and now is obviously beloved in Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and that portion of New Mexico. But how hard it was for him to leave the one for the other.
Well, indeed, that would be a great challenge for sure. Now, of course, a person could say no if they, like you said, that the apostolic delegate asked Bishop Ray if he was going to, if he's in good health and some of that. Mm-hmm. And if you said, no, I'm not. In fact, I just was at my doctor last week, and he says I have serious heart issues. Then he'd probably say, well, oh, gee, well, let me think about that. But if you can't do it, then, you know. But other than something like that, then obviously one would want to just respond to the call. So, and of course, one of the great things for Bishop Ray will be that he won't have to face that loss of moving. I mean, if he had been made the auxiliary of, say, even San Francisco or Stockton or whatever, he would have to leave his place. And it's interesting that he's going to continue to, it seems, be connected with St. Francis. It'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Right.
But I guess we'll hear more about that as time goes on,
well,
how that'll work.
I was earlier interviewed Archbishop Emeritus Alfred Hughes from New Orleans. And he has written a book, Spiritual Masters Living and Praying in the Catholic Tradition, a tremendous book, and 91 years old, and was just perfect on the radio. But I said, and he initially was in Boston. I think he was just teaching, and I'm as a priest in the Archdiocese of Boston. And he got the call that he was going to be the Bishop of Baton Rouge, and he said, I told them, have you considered how difficult it is to send a Yankee into the South?
Yes, yes.
And then he fell in love with the place, you know.
Well, on the positive side of it, you know, it's like, you know, wherever you go in the world, you're in a Catholic church and you're home. And
that's right.
Certainly I found over moving to different parishes and so on that, you know, yeah, sure, it's hard to leave the place where you are. But on the other hand, you're really going home, too, in the sense that the people you will meet in the new parish, and certainly in this particular case, the bishop, I mean, people just have a great appreciation and regard for their bishop. And I think one of the problems they're going to have in this particular case is how are they going to cull the numbers to come to the ordination mass for him? Because
I know.
In the past, like we had people coming in, even like Bishop Garcia or Bishop Cotta, well, they were glad to go to the mass and see the mass and celebrate the new bishop, but nobody knew him and any of that. But now all these parishes, especially that he's been in and committees he's been on and friendships and so on, I mean, there'll be just a million people wanting to.
I know the whole town of Davis is going to want to be there. I know that, you know. Because he was, like so many of our parish priests, he was a member of the community. You know, everybody knew Father Ray. It wasn't just, that's, you know, Sunday morning at St. James. No, I mean, he was a member of the community. You'd see him at UC Davis basketball games. You know, you'd see him, you know, at parades. You'd see him in downtown restaurant. You'd see him, you just see him around, you know, and was very active in civic issues.
Well, that's the beauty of, you know, the Holy Spirit calling him to be bishop now, because that's what you really want in a bishop who can be out and about and comfortable, and he seems to just fit in. And I'm sure in this new role, he'll be like an old glove, you know, in no time at all. I mean, when he goes for confirmations or goes here or there, or bless a building or variety of things that a bishop does, I mean, he'll fit in so well. And he'll bring all that experience, as you say, of civic and stuff like that. And so I don't think anything will, this will be, I'd say, a fairly easy transition for him because he's just a people person. And, you know, once he learns the ropes a little bit of how to be a bishop and all that, then it'll just be like almost being in a new parish.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought. I had thought about, you know, the cathedral and you know, of course, I'd like to go. My family would like to go, but we don't. You know, there's a lot of people that should be ahead of us in line, if you know what I mean. Not because they're more important or anything else, but because they've probably known him even longer than we have, but he is so beloved that and obviously St. James isn't his only parish that he's been at, and
big parishes also, which was important, like St. Anthony's,
sure,
St. Paul's and St. John's and Folsom, and
right.
So it wasn't like he was in small places where, or out of the way places, but central places are right here,
right,
and so that's a beautiful thing. And again, you know, just an affirmation of, you know, the call of the Holy Spirit to him. And I've never seen him in anything only jovial mood with priests and joking with them. And in all the way, priests give each other a hard time about this, that, or the other, or whatever. So he'll just be, and of course, it'll be live streamed to the Philippines and to
right.
all over the place. And so in that sense, people who won't be able to get there will you know, be able to participate in that way. And it's possible also, you know, that he might arrange, or bishop might allow him to, you know, send him over the summer anyway to go between now and Labor Day to visit all those parishes where he was and do masses, like a couple of masses, and have a reception or something, you know, in each of those on a given Sunday, and probably wouldn't do all the masses in a particular parish, but if it was told he was going to be at St. James on such a Sunday and doing the 9 o'clock on the 11 or whatever, right. You know, the Saturday evening, and two or three of the four or five or whatever they have, then that would be a beautiful way, and people would get to meet him as bishop. So I'm sure the creative minds over at the Pastoral Center are all working on this right now. Busy people they'll be too, the committee getting it all organized, and there's a million one things to be done, but it'll be a happy day on the Feast of the Visitation of the Virgin Mary, so May 31st.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know, I just looked it up while we were talking. Father Bishop Cotta, Stockton, March 15, I'll let you guess the year that he was installed.
Was it March 25?
You know, I think that date was wrong because I thought it was the Feast of the Annunciation. The date I saw said 15, and I'm thinking, no, it's the 25th, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was, but I'm not sure about that.
No,
but,
well, you know, I looked it up and it said
6 years ago, years ago he was bishop?
2018, so 6 years ago.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. It started here in 2014, apparently. So it was, was here. And yeah, I knew that March 25th was a very big day to him, and I'm pretty sure that's what it was in Stockton. Yeah.
Well, it's a long time that we waited for a new one, but on the other hand, some things are worth waiting for. And with COVID and one thing or another, it wasn't that bad because even the bishop was sort of restricted for a couple of years there, that things that you would normally be doing, like blessing new buildings and even confirmations and everything like that, were a different thing. So now as things come back, I think this is going to be a great thing, Bob, for the diocese, because, you know, we've had a bit of a worry there with the bankruptcy stuff and that, but this will give people a lot of hope and a lot of encouragement and a big day out, you know, and the parishes that you mentioned celebrating their new bishop, as it were, as well as all the parishes. So I think it's going to be a positive thing for Bishop Soto and for the whole diocese and give people a lift.
Yeah, I think I think it's exactly. It was the impression that Shelley, my wife, and I had was really an uplifting moment, you know, and it was a time of real joy. So
yes. And of course, we'll see him, no doubt, with a lot of priests, changing the subject a little bit. You know, we are mourning now the loss of two fine priests in the diocese. One probably much more known than the other, but Father Bob Copsey was certainly a fine priest, sort of a humble, shy, reserved man who wasn't involved in all the big power things, I suppose, of the diocese, you would say. But then on the other hand, Monsignor Al O'Connor was like the old saying, everybody listens when E.F. Hutton talks.
Right, right.
So Monsignor O'Connor was that type of E.F. Hutton, that he had just a great standing with the priests and people, of course, and had done a lot of work in the pastoral center or the chancery, as it used to be called, many years ago. And then later on as a pastor in various places. The funeral at the cathedral this coming Thursday, that'll be Bishop Ray's first up there as a bishop, along with, of course, Bishop Soto and Bishop Wiegand and whoever else priests are chosen to be up there with them. But they were close to Monsignor O'Connor. Pretty sure. I think Father McKeefrey, a great friend of his, will be the preacher, and that'll be a beautiful thing itself. He's a very fine preacher, and they were very close. I know he was very close to Monsignor Murphy as well, but to a lot of priests, but those in particular would have known each other for many years. So he'll certainly be missed.
Well, so many of the... When the great priest migration from Ireland came over to the Diocese of Sacramento, When did that start, and when did that end? And so many, you know, and some now we have lost.
Well, you could say it started with Bishop O'Connell himself, was obviously from Ireland and tried to get as many vocations from there as he could and did. And then it continued and continued right up to, you know, I think the only Irish priest left as a pastor now is Father Des O'Reilly out in St. Mel in Fair Oaks.
Mm-hmm.
All the other Irish priests are retired, and, you know, some in quite poor health, like Father Dan Casey and Father Michael McFadden. Those are in hospice and so on. But a lot of priests are not in great shape. There are quite a few still out there doing a lot of good work and so on. But certainly the passing of priests now, I'd say you could say that almost everyone in the next 5 or 10 years will be an Irishman.
Mm-hmm.
And gradually the numbers will, you know, there just won't be any more as years go by. I can't imagine another priest from Ireland, at least in our lifetime, coming, because they have such a dire shortage there, and there are many African priests and so on, Filipino priests too over there, Polish priests. So therefore, as these senior men pass on, then it'll be the end of the Irish. But, you know, I was noticing on the retreat there, every generation has its time and its way. And I have a lot of connection with priests for one reason or another in a variety of ways here. And I'm just, I often say that I'm so impressed by the new batch of pastors, you know, some of them now quite young. A lot of them, you know, maybe only 5 or 6 years ordained, their first shot at it. And it used to be way back that you could be 10, 15 or more even years ordained, and you're allowed a lot of time to settle as a priest, you know. But now, most of the time, the priests now are on their own out in parishes, especially, you know, maybe a little bit out in distant places and so on. Like I think of Wairika or Alturas or Weaverville, a place like that. But I just admire what they are doing. And it reminds me that my first pastor way back in 1973, Monsignor John O'Connor, said, you know, I'm doing things the best I can as pastor in these times here. You young fellows, he said, it'll be so different, oh, so different for you when you're my age and in these situations. But you'll do it your way and the way it's needed to be done then, just as I'm doing it now. And the people who went before me, they did it in the circumstances of their life. So I think that was a very good attitude to have. And I see it happening with these younger priests and younger pastors especially, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, well, isn't there another Irish priest active? I think he's the chaplain at Beale Air Force Base.
Yeah, that guy is around too. Yeah, but we'll leave it at that. Yeah, very good. It's enjoyable to be at Beale Air Force Base and work with the priest there. I enjoy that. And also, I enjoy working with the cathedral still and Father Michael O'Reilly, the rector, joy to work with. And, of course, I also have a long connection with Our Lady of the Assumption, and Father Arduino is a joy to work with too. So it's great to see the different parishes and the different things. And please God, Bishop Ray now will, I'm sure it's going to be great for Bishop Soler to have him, because there's so many things that a bishop is needed to do, blessings of this, not to mention confirmations or other events. But I know when people build a new hall or they do this or that or whatever, they love to have a bishop come to bless it and be a big day of Mass and whatever. So, and Bishop Ray will be just so good at that.
Well, I look at all the events that you and I have attended over the years, and almost without exception, Bishop Soto is there, and people see him there, and then, oh, well, we're going to have a wine tasting, you know, next Tuesday. It's a fundraiser for some worthy charity, you know, and and so he must get just billions, literally, of not just invitations, but we'd like you to come and could you speak or et cetera, et cetera. And he doesn't look like he says no very often.
And, well, he'll be out, please God, this please God, we'll see him on this Friday night for the big event of the St. Vincent de Paul dinner.
Yeah. Right.
I'm sure we'll see a lot of wonderful people at that, and great celebration. And I know if Bishop Ray will be able to come at this short notice. He may have other plans, but anyway, Bishop Soto will surely be there. And his heart is very much with St. Vincent de Paul, and really is committed to helping them. And then, of course, we'll have the big St. Vincent de Paul Western Convention here coming up. You probably have heard some of that. That's going to be May 16 to 18. I'm sure various people would love to talk on your show about that and promote you know, the great works that St. Vincent de Paul is doing. But I know I'm going to be very involved in that, in both of those, and they're just beautiful things, yeah.
Where will they headquarter that?
It'll be at the Doubletree.
Okay.
Well, of course, the dinner...
No, I don't mean the dinner, I mean the convention.
But then the other one, yes, is also going to be at the Doubletree.
Oh, will it? Okay.
Yeah. On that Thursday to Saturday, the 16 to 18 of May... So that's been planned now, and all putting that together, exciting events there too, yeah.
And I've been told that you might still be able to get a ticket for Friday night's dinner at the Doubletree, the 18th annual benefit for the poor. Go to SVDP, St. Vincent de Paul, -sacramento.org. And one of the keynote speakers is going to be Deacon Gene Smith, who was the national president from 1999 to 2005, and we had him on the program. And boy, he's a dynamite. He's very good. So he'll be a great.
So that's this Friday night, the 26th of 26th of this month, and so hopefully a lot of people will come. It's a great occasion, and it shows the church, you know, at its best, doing charity and. And the type of people involved in St. Vincent de Paul, you know, their motto is increase in Christ.
Yep.
Increase in Christ. St. Vincent de Paul is primarily a spiritual organization. You know, the good works they do is very important, but it is intended to be a way of achieving your salvation, as it were, because just like you achieve your salvation with as a husband and father and all that, it's the work you do. Well, our St. Vincent de Paul work comes from a spirit of faith, and the more, of course, one does, then the more one grows. So that's why they have the motto, increase in Christ. I love that motto because it just shows that we're all the time increasing, and obviously the person who gives the increase is Christ.
Father, always a joy to talk with you. I hope our paths cross again very soon. I'm thinking it's going to be Friday night at the Doubletree.
Please, God, that would be great. So God bless you, and delighted. Sure you'll be having Father Bishop Ray on and all sorts of things going on now to help our people. And so this is the Easter season full of joy. God is with us. Christ is risen. And now we have these great events and a new bishop, and oh, my gosh, it's getting better and better all the time.
It really is. Well, Father, God bless you, too, and thanks for all you do, and we'll look forward to seeing you Friday night.
Very good. God bless everybody. Bye.
Thanks so much, Father. That's Father Michael Kiernan. Always a joy to have him on this program. We'll take a quick break. Be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. I want to take a minute to talk about the annual Catholic Appeal, the 2024 annual Catholic Appeal. So important here in the Diocese of Sacramento. So many ministries supported by the annual Catholic Appeal, and the people in the Diocese of Sacramento have always been so generous. But a wonderful brochure, a pamphlet, really, that you may have received in the mail, and on the back cover a picture. Maybe it's front, I guess that's the front cover. Deacon Kevin Staskow says, I really think that everyone has something to give. When Jesus was literally dying on the cross, he found the strength to turn to the thief being crucified next to him and minister to that person. So often we have all kinds of excuses not to reach out to those next to us. Indeed, today you will be with me in paradise. And you look through this brochure and you will learn the many, many, many ministries that are supported by the annual Catholic Appeal. And 25% of your donation goes back to the parishes for social ministry at your parish. 50% supports charities, Catholic Charities of Sacramento, and the members in that are Catholic Charities of Yolo Solano, Northern Valley Catholic Social Service, which serves Butte, Glen, Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, and Trinity counties in this 20-county diocese, and Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services right here in the greater Sacramento area. Also, associate members are Camp Recreation, serving Northern California, the Mother Teresa Maternity Home in Placerville, the Rancho Cordova Food Locker in Greater Sacramento, the Upper Room Dining Hall in Placerville. Many of you have worked at those places, are very familiar with those places, or have availed yourself of the wonderful services they provide. 25% supports education, seminary formation, and Catholic school tuition assistance. Partners in the annual Catholic Appeal and Catholic Charities of Sacramento include Anderson Cottonwood Christian Assistance, Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home right here in Sacramento that does such wonderful work, the Catholic Ladies Relief Society up in Chico, Community Assistance Network in Greenville, Portola, and Quincy up in the hills, Loaves and Fishes in Sacramento, which just does wonderful work with the homeless, Sacramento Life Center, which has saved so many lives here in the Sacramento area, Salvation Army Food Shelf in Susanville, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul and their seven district councils, the North State, Placer, Yuba, Sutter, Butte, Sacramento East, South Sacramento, Elk Grove, Sacramento Metro Area, and Yolo Delta and Solano. Also, the Stanford Settlement Neighborhood Center in Sacramento and the Wellsprings Women's Center in Sacramento, plus Yuba City, Yuba Sutter, Right to Life, the two counties just north of Sacramento. More than 100 programs provide things like counseling, emergency fund, shelter and clothing, permanent and transitional housing, job training, pregnancy counseling, post and prenatal care, independent living skills, mentoring, parenting skills, after-school care, refugee resettlement, citizenship and immigration services, and jail ministry. Our gifts help people who are mentally ill, homeless, disaster survivors, immigrants, elderly, developmentally disabled, incarcerated, working families, refugees, at-risk youth, the unborn, pregnant women, the hungry, and single parents. Such a wide, wide range of our Catholic mission here on this earth and in this diocese of Sacramento. One of the programs through Northern Valley Catholic Social Services is the court-appointed special advocate program, which is operated out of all the superior courts in the state of California, and it partners with Northern Valley Catholic Social Service to help kids who need advocates in the courts. They talk about, in this pamphlet, a young woman named Isabel, who is devoted to ensuring a positive support system for foster kids now and for their future. As a court-appointed special advocate, a program administered with compassion and dedication by Northern Valley Catholic Social Service, Isabel gives kids the voice they need in court to have a positive path in life. She was once in foster care herself. The severe trauma a child goes through is all too familiar. Today, she's reunited with her parents, has a family of her own, and is focused on becoming a lawyer. Northern Valley Catholic Social Services gives her the opportunity to advocate in court for children with stories like hers. Again, the annual Catholic appeal, give generously, give whatever you can, whether it's a small amount, a large amount. Also, more men can say yes to the call to the priesthood. Support from the annual Catholic appeal helps seminarian Eric Patrick, who is pictured in this brochure, to become Father Eric Patrick this past June. We've had him on our program, a delightful priest. Father Patrick is earnestly hopeful that he can be a conduit for the experience of God's mercy and love. With coughs offset by the appeal, the 12 men now in seminarian formation can focus less on financial worries and more on preparing to serve in our parishes. The annual Catholic appeal, a wonderful, wonderful way to support so many ministries in the Diocese of Sacramento. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
We stand and lift up our hands, for the joy of the Lord is our strength. We bow down and worship Him now. How great!